So I will introduce my Dharma sister, Shanae. She will be giving the talk today. She gave us a lovely workshop over this weekend, Friday evening and Saturday. And I hope that we can offer that again, because all of you who weren't there, I wish you had been there. But you'll get something of it. Jeff says like she usually gives a talk like this before giving the workshop. So once she gives the talk, I think you'll be like, oh, now I wish I'd gone to that workshop. So we'll have to just do something like that in the future. So yeah, we started practicing together. So I arrived at Dharma Rain in 94, and you arrived
97.
97 or so. So we knew each other as like Dharma babies, you know, brand new to the practice and trying hard and struggling and all of that, right? And you know, if at that time there'd been a little like a little window for us to see us ourselves sitting here right now, we'd just be like, "What?" Like, yeah. So, yeah, we both were saying yesterday, like, if we can do it, so can you. So. Yeah, it's one of the very sweet things about just maintaining contact with Sangha over a long period of time, and you really get to see people grow and you know, overcome their obstacles and become who they should be. So I think you will get a picture of, and you'll kind of introduce yourself as well. So, okay, I will just turn it over to you then.
I put this somewhere.
Just clip it if you can up in your the top of your robe.
Okay. And if you could just give me the time that it's when it's 45 minutes, because you're in a different time space than Buddha. I'm used to a certain time that I know.
Didn't want me to like ring a bell or
No, if you could just give me the
something.
number when it's 45
Oh,
minutes. Yeah.
so that'll be for starting at 11:24. You know, we ended at 12:15. So if you wrapped it
Okay.
up by five after, you know, by noon or by five after or something.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I mean, I don't know. I have my talks from Buddha Eye, and I timed them actually when I first started giving talks. And this talk will mostly be is all written out, and I will mostly just move through the talk with this through the script that I have, because you know, which is not what I did so much with the workshop, but mostly because I really like that I put things together in certain ways, words together in certain ways, and I want them to be received within in that way. So most of this talk will not be extemporaneous. I'll try to remember to look up. I'm an extreme introvert, and that's not what I'm good at, saying hello and looking up at people. I'm much better now. It's taken a long time. And we did do the workshop Friday night and Saturday. It's the same workshop I did at Buddha Eye over a 5-week period. So it was a little different in a workshop environment. And usually I do talks before the classes, because my classes at Buddha Eye are come from a slightly different point of view. I'm an artist, and just naturally my way of looking at the Dharma is quite different. And I speak from an imaginal realm, and I went through this yesterday, but the imaginal realm is called the Sambhogakaya. And the Sambhogakaya, if any of you know the Lotus Sutra or the Avatamsaka Sutra, or even the presence of bodhisattvas, and there is actually a lot of imagination and poetry in Buddhist practice. Once you practice for a while, you'll find it. And I find imagination even in places where people would say it doesn't exist at all, like in the Heart Sutra. You know, I love that space of the void and emptiness. So So, and the main why it's important to know, even if this is not how you operate, or how the kind of person you are is much more logical or much more, likes the nuts and bolts world, and that's fine. But the reason of the imaginal is that it gives you a direct expression of the fact that things are and they're not, because they're interconnected and because they're continually changing. And so the way that that is expressed, is very unusual and very imaginative and kind of like Kuan Yin or Prajnaparamita, something that is there, but it's not literally there. So it's very helpful to take this in some portion of yourself. Let that enter into the lovely person you already are. You've already been doing it well. If you're past 18, if you've made it, you're already doing okay. So you're just refining, and this is part of a refinement process that helps you not take the Dharmakaya, your meditation practice, the idea of stillness and emptiness as a place to reside, literally, and also your day-to-day life, the ordinary world, not getting stuck there either. So the Sambhogakaya is this space in between, and she looks out towards the world, the psyche, actually, and she looks out toward the world, and she also looks back toward emptiness and the void. And so it's kind of an in-between place. And I like to think of it as a place of exchange between how we're caught up in karma in one way or another, either spinning out or repressing things under, and exchanging that with a sense of fluidity, of confidence, of being able to move within conditions without getting stuck. And it is possible. Turns out that you really have the key, but in order to turn the key, you have to do the work, the actual work of it. And that's moving through all of the things in your life that kind of cause a little bit of, not even a little bit, sometimes a whole lot, of difficulty and problem. So again and again, Buddhism really tells you that the difficulty is the your wealth, or the opening into not only creativity, but into a sense of peace and openness. And this wholeness that we talk about, but wholeness, infinite, includes everything. So it can be a scary place to be, and we take it kind of slowly, over years. And so you're just carrying the Dharma with you, with the life you are living, instead of depending on the world of samsara. You're depending on also something that is deeper and more vast, and has been proven over thousands of years, 2,500 years. We happen to be Buddhists. You can do it in other ways too, but over 2,500 years, this has been a proven method for helping people reach this place of peace and emptiness and openness. So the name of the talk is In a Dream, Expressing the Dream. And you can just relax and let the poetry and the writing just move through you. You don't have to strain to understand. Whatever you resonate with, keep that in mind and let the rest just flow through you or filter through. So this talk is written to introduce a class I will be doing, or I already did, Within a Dream, Expressing the Dream, and that is Mutsu Satsuma. And the title is taken from Master Dogen, his 39th fascicle of the Shobogenzo. Through the years, I have not read Dogen with any real passion. Primarily, my contact with his writings was through practicing at Dharma Rain. In the past few years, my meditation practice deepened in unexpected ways. Intuitively, I felt I understood Dogen and was drawn to some of the fascicles. With the ocean mudra, I related mostly to how the fascicle resonated for me. With Mutu Setsumu, I have taken time to listen to the commentary on Dogen's sources and his particular insights. As a teacher, I'm responsible for not leading people astray with merely personal inclinations. So respect for structure and fundamentals within Buddhist tradition is vital. Most importantly, I'm answering my own questions in regard to the fascicle, hopefully to suggest to you your own questions. The class is subtly underpinned by the fascicle, but is not directly related to the fascicle. And the dream before reality, the nightmare before tragedy, fright before the monster, nausea before the fall. The world is a dream imagined. Doing this class has been on my mind for a while, wanting to write about and share my experience and insight into dream, not about specifics of the night dream, but intimations in regard to the quality and significance of dreaming, of which the night dream is a part. Dream as the basis of my soul life, but not in a conscious way. Soul not permanent or separate, but enfolded firmly within its own truth. A synthesizing power poised between mind and spirit and body and the marrow of the middle way. So it kind of threads through this emptiness or meditation and your daily life. And it is this Sambhoga or soul realm that performs that function, inviting all into an adventure with the poetic basis of inspiration, cultivating an ability to dream well. I was an art student in the 1990s at Rutgers University Mason Gross School of the Arts in New Brunswick, New Jersey. The trajectory of being an artist, a journey I believe I was born into. My receptivity to powerful and difficult imagery as innate, awakened, and oddly kept alive through events that took place in my home. Rutgers was conceptual in its orientation, and I experienced some resistance to my imagery and how I approached my life as an artist. This is a good thing, as I was forced to focus on the power and value these images held for me, how painting or writing them was not a choice, as nothing else would do. In regard to Dogen and Zen, meditation and study, the desire to foster compassion and wisdom as a deepening of our natural inclination, concurrent in some capacity with a creative practice. Moment by moment, we craft this life. Day to day, we give this true nature body right now. And we don't need the dates for the class. So there is no special ability needed here. There is no lack of gifts. More likely, there is a lack of appreciation for our gifts and the world's gifts. All the world and we ourselves take part in universal themes and patterns, innate powers that motivate, challenge, and nourish. Dreams. Dreams, I can't fathom their portent. This flowing on of images. She speaks in the language of flowers and sings a flower song. To sing the petals of strange roses. Oh, eyes of night flow into the dawn. Her face, the darkness carries forth, opening wide the journey. Again and again, our story begins. In a dream, expressing the dream. In a forest is a woman embedded in a tree. Its roots her mind and branches are her hair. The dark hollow, the belly, a matrix filled with seeds. She dreams the earth, its color, its faith, its memory. She dreams the sky, its open space, its blue. The knots and hollows contain her silence and her mystery. However, the woman was so much a part of the tree, she was unable to walk or dance. Although she was a being of great and ancient beauty, yet there was no light for her beauty to be seen. Two Kanzians, two aspects of her life, the young and the old and the new, and trust. When things press from within, how shall I read them? If I have faith, what, where, how is this faith? A woman comes into my dream. She puts her head upon my lap. I stroke her short black pencil straight hair. I tell her it is all right. This labyrinth, seemingly out of nowhere, out of an apparent nowhere, a life becomes day by day, a work, our vow, a promise. The eye, the ear opens wider to ask, where are we most at home? How do I turn toward the things of the world, reach for a larger experience of the world, enter into the interiority of things so they become my own? Is it a garden of paradise, moving through buried and secret memory? Is it being with our children, or the plainness of a hidden corner, a narrow corridor, a chest of drawers, a candle, an old and ancient oak? Perhaps it is about a life spent talking with the trees, the rain, and the mountains. These discordant and invisible voices, they settle in our belly, lodge in our heart, or push us from behind. We learn to listen better. The half and the quarter moon smiling, her slender crescent facing upward. We enter this middle ground, the Sambhogakaya realm, her one face turning toward the world, her one face turning back toward eternity. Yet at times, something in us wants to say no. Sometimes with good reason. At times, we are in the way. We learn to move ourselves out of the way. We learn to say yes, a wholehearted yes. Yes to the life I am, again and again, yes to whatever this life may bring. In the middle way, the adventure into the inner story and finding freshness of mind. This third thing arising, like the 10,000 beautiful things of our world, as the many faces of the soul. We have not been born into a world of stories, united collectively through a shared vision. What is the value of stories? We need to begin anew to find our story, our life embedded in the greater story, but a story that is virgin, suggested, working from the inside out, and less known and uncertain, undiscovered ways of our own. All beings have their stories, not a linear progression to a predestined ending, but a labyrinth of connections to our great roots, memory, a genuine history. I wish to make tribute through images and words that evoke the mystery, to give body to the myth world, the magical and imaginative potential of a cosmos, images and stories embedded in the psyche, the very structure of consciousness. I would like to encourage people to listen more thoughtfully, to see, to hear within the ordinary events of our days, the quiet intuitions of the universe. Now, a great old tree is a majestic being. Its green leaves shimmer, its bark, sepia, gray, black, and flowing. her roots deepening into fresh new loam. But there were none to see these things, no light for her beauty to be seen. Archetype and interlude into stone. The archetypal fantasy within the tale or poem is not literal yet profoundly real. The vision happening years before the poem or group of paintings seeking to express a particular way of seeing, a first utterance, like a premonition. The core suggested is always right here, constant and continuous, vital and active, albeit unconscious, like the Buddha always present, reciting the sutra. The creative work begins as a continuous movement inward, for me opening into a below, re-entering the Gordian knot, unraveling, becoming undone, a slow cleansing of what we might term self or center. James Hillman, the great archetypal psychologist, describes the working of dreams as the removal of certain elements and factors out of life, giving them soul values. And this entails a movement away from the world, a death making, turning back toward the archetype, a movement off center into the wilderness, away from a merely human-centered view. And this is not a movement away from compassion or care. The angel of wisdom, the angel of compassion is an image lived and resonant, complex and vital. She is singing in the distance. Can you hear her? Recognition day by day, revealing itself through karma, is an assimilation of inner events distilled through time, the timeless and language, twisted, discordant blurring of the edges, a slow, continuous, and inward turning. We do not realize how provocative and primal these intimations of our depth are. Our fear clothed in old memory, the discarding and shedding of this memory. Rooted in all beings, devoted to all things, as myself moving with all beings, even in the most ordinary circumstance, our reaching unfolds in unanticipated ways. Images as a poetic basis for language, encompassing language in the broadest sense, which includes the visual, words, gesture, ritual, color, a silent pressing of our interiority into tasks, to lose our ground by opening, falling through gaps and chasms, through new ways of thinking and feeling, images felt as an interior seeing, primal and original, to be at peace and breathe easy, and when we know we have come home. Stones. In my hand, a stone evokes physical beauty. In dreams, a magic presence. First born of the sea, unstable like fire flowing, stones are alive. They radiate outward from dark primal centers, invisible to the eye, inhabiting the forest, hills, and streams. Mosses grow upon them. Large rocks by the seaside gather as a community, harboring seeds, sea pods, and small creatures in their crevices and hollows. Adorned in reds and striated ochre, stones lie at the bottom of streams as pure beauty, smooth and slippery, embedding in the sand like jewels. Animals and plants impress themselves on the surface of the stone, imprinting their shadow in form, in time, a symbiotic unity. The stone is cool, hard, and enduring earth, like bone and shell, moving to a slower rhythm. A stone is hot and molten, Stones have current and ebb and flow. Stones are quietly dreaming. Living the dream, interlude, story woman, myth woman. Most of us have not learned faith. We don't live in a world of faith. We see ourselves as hapless, dependent on luck or opportunity, rare talent, power dynamics, who's to blame or in control. We come to religious centers to absorb and realize teachings and practices not directly integrated or shared with the world we live in. An expression of native vision, even aspects of kindness and compassion, can feel out of place in environments geared to standard efficiency and policy. Great doubt, great faith, groundless, soft belly up, every circumstance as a potential, a first memory, a repetition of an original memory. The depth and dark, vulnerable and tremulous, step by step, our potential to realize an inner truth, our original promise made manifest. And the moon, like an eye, white, luminous, opens wide, hangs like a piece of the sky, like eyes large, cat-like, snake-like, sun-like, me-like, where the tree roots reach into black coal, dirty, dusty underground, beneath, absorbed, lost, and/or bleeding, embracing a whole world invisibly resonant and light. A serpent curled asleep within the hollow, he is verdant, moist, newborn. A rare jewel of the forest, he rests his body, still and present. He too is dreaming. To live our dream, our life imagined through story, healing as imagination, image as in image in the way of a deepening truth. Myths embrace multiple impossibilities, our being here now, of the many layers and perspectives with which we shall participate. And the imagery in my work is generated from within. It is imaginal and mythical. These works are an expression of vow, an interior quest, and deeply personal myth. And I became an artist out of a profound need to express imagery and ideas integral to my life and experience, but also out of the love of beauty, how it is rooted in sacred forms and tradition. As a young child, I suffered a serious illness, which brought out a series of ink drawings, an expression of raw vision I believe to be imprinted within me. Years ago, when asked by a friend, how did I know what to do? I said, I followed an image. That's a crazy thing to say, but the image saved. Years later, charcoal drawings emerged, inspired by my introduction to African dance and ritual performance. Working alone in the 90s, I found my connection to the feminine. I wrote poetry, created paintings and prints that spoke to my kinship with nature and the elements. This was an opening of the heart. Trees, stones, the moon. They became my ancestral teachers and encouraged a search for a formal relationship to a spiritual tradition. I read spiritual texts, immersed myself in fairy tales and mythologies within and all around us is a vital matrix revealing color, sound, and our capacity to dream. These images sustain us because their depth and perception resonate with a profound sense of what is real. I have stayed close and true to what for me has been most difficult. These words are exemplary for how I have lived my life, how I have worked to create a language for these images, what arises in unbidden within us, moments of utmost importance, working to clarify these moments of the soul, twisted, slow, it rests and rise. Images like persons, they erupt, they rattle the self. The more insight we gain into ourselves, into emptiness, the more it rattles, nevertheless heals. A movement forward, yet entrenched in the infinite, not an established past, but through unknowing, and always touching many possibilities. Our quest for ancestral connections as an inner relationship with the ancestry of seeds, like the tree, it grows deep, its rings expansive from the inside out. The forest sees through invisible eyes with which its leaves and branches spread, and we as well. Arms outstretched wide, we inwardly reach. Practice itself, what we call awakening, cultivates flexibility and fresh occasions. The vision can be sensory and concrete, or dark and fabulous, but open to the imaginal, not literal or single in meaning. It is an image language of texture, pebbles, seeds, blood, belly, and bone, of water and owls, tortoises, deities, satyrs and dragons, fire and demons, a white oak, a dog, and the mountains, and of various in and out scapes. And none of these things is merely what it is. Our relationship with the 10,000 beautiful things depends on imagination, each event or being, a doorway opening into beauty, pattern, the invisible of mystery and origin, not origin like when did something begin, origin as prayer, as a vow, and the inner spark, the metaphor as personal. We are thoroughly involved in the risk of connection. Myth as a way of seeing, stories opening into stories, images dark and fabulous as nature, as our nature. Stories simple yet profound, suggestive and fertile, able to support diverse perspectives, multiple layers of change and shifting meanings. And the archetypes as expressions of value, reflecting back both the great and small themes. They encourage our enthusiasm. James Hillman, the great archetypal psychologist, speaks of instinct as metaphor and that its original sense meant to see. And I'm talking about an inner seeing insight, as well as seeing through your eyes. Imagination as primary and my seeing. Henry Corbin, Islamic philosopher and mystic, speaks to something called the tawil, and the tawil in Islam, a term related to the inner journey, to cause to return, to lead back, to restore one's origin. And the voice of the image is one's own voice. In the practice of meditation, of the deep work of the psyche, we do turn the mind back, and we do not know, and yet we do return, and transformation takes place. Myth woman, story woman, voiceless, so gently rocking in the cradle of the breath, her grief absorbed by the night's loan, drawn into the earth, drawn down, she swallows whole, pebbles, seeds, bones, the branches and roots, embraced peaceably at the hearth in the bowels of the earth. The goodness of poetry is to be with the 10,000 things. One night, the woman in the tree looked up at the moon and said, "Oh, moon, eye of the night, sing your sweet music and share with me your light." "Yes, dear woman," replied the moon, "I shall share with you my light." Ring upon ring, her thread reweaves new life into the circulation of things. Death unfolds her rich dual grain. Tree woman, half a woman, half a tree. Her vines coil, thorny, slow moving. Her loam thick, rich, wet, and black. Her life is a fiery furnace, a belly of bellies. And finding voice, interlude with the owl. The serpent out of his own body produced a stream, one warm, one cold. So two serpents out of no place arise. Two serpents, each produced out of their own body a stream, one warm, one cold. And that was how they spoke out of the dream, how spirits of the water hear. They listen with great attention. They whisper, then act to cleanse the distress of the dawn. The forest and the old oak, the woman in the tree, the newly born green serpent bathed in the voices of the dead, which now brings happiness. This is how spirits of the water hear. They perk up their inner ears to listen. They whisper. This is how spirits of the serpents hear arise spontaneously in the forest of the 10,000 beautiful things. And I'm walking in the woods, my footprints firm, a single act of stepping sounds, one foot after the other speaks as the motion of my walking, feet moving yet firmly placed, the hard, dark soil, the dry leaves crackle to relieve the anguish of the forest, a hungry space, dark in the forest, brings forth all beings, and with blessings they gather. And finding voice, expressing voice, even this particular word voice stimulates. I move to imagine. I hear the particular voices rustling in the wind, on my walks, in the midst of my work, lodged in the heart as original memory, a cacophony of voices, eyes, the ears, the many hollows like mouths of the forest, surrounded by leaves, barks, and roots of trees they sing, to spark the imagination. The expression of otherness is greater than self-expression, than the unreflective mouthing of conventional view. The totality of the 10,000 beautiful things, the whole spiritual journey is seen as a struggle to find one's voice, the quest for interior values, which is deeply personal, but personal with a capital P. Deep and interpenetrating archaic value expressed through the person, a personal factor that includes, in a centered and powerful way as myself, the expression of the Buddha. The Buddha speaks, and the 10,000 beautiful things. Without voice, we become a victim of circumstance. And this is my homage to the true work of the Bodhisattva and Samantabhadra, who is the Bodhisattva of loving activity in the world. In the Lotus Sutra, he is the protector of beings who study, recite, and actualize the teachings. Samantabhadra, the main protagonist in the Avatamsaka, a Bodhisattva of practice, protector of the Sutra, as well as those who are devoted to the practice. He is a source of vows, and I experience Samantabhadra as my wounded bodhisattva, learning about myself in the world I live in, which was a somewhat, not just somewhat, troubled and painstaking, yet stimulating and needful, an important aspect of my practice. However, so much of what I'm learning now, what I glean from the arts, poems, stones, and scriptures and stories, grounded, clear-eyed, authentic, and able to function, what has brought me great happiness, that which I would not have found had I not been moved as an artist by the Sambhogakaya realm. Interlude. Owl. Owl perches among sundry branches. He who is the nature of trees. Owl who is the nature of the hollow, who sings the forest in somber tone. Owl with eyes adept, golden, piercing, he listens, intense, attuned, ear holes honed over aeons toward his prey. Wings spread impossibly bright, silent, expansive, they glide. With talons he grips, myth like a seed, the night dark, unfathomable. How did owl begin? How did he find his way? How does owl turn his mind, turning his head more than halfway around? His feathered body makes the dream. He desires his whole way back around. In order to step away from the world, we are invited to enter. Enter among the bodhisattvas, enter among the Tathagatas, enter into worlds, enter into kalpas. We enter into story. We enter our own story. Why should we need this subtle stepping aside from the world in order to know the world, in order to know ourselves? And to the Greek and Renaissance philosopher, archetypes reveal origins or a model. In ceremonies and rituals, the archetype functions as the way of the mystery and following the way of the ancients. Archetypes can be expressed through images arising out of elemental substances such as water, fire, air, flow, space, attractions and aversions, how our lives are shaped through the character of a particular element. An element penetrates, informing our being. And for Carl Jung, archetypes are deep instinctual patterns at the root of our being. The power of the archetype is numinous, suggestive. It hints and alludes, yet can never thoroughly be known. Archetypes are living powers of the cosmos and not man-made. And compassion is cosmic, even more than religions are man-made or produced, you know, but something such as compassion and wisdom are archetypal powers and innate to us. The archetype is not permanent, even though at times it is referred to as an immutable idea, as with divine names, elemental and primal. It is independent, yet constantly changing through interrelationships. Archetypes take us out of the limited space of brute and merely personal reality, enlarging the perspective, giving us back our life. In our night dreams, though enormously appreciated and important, ourselves are images which are done to. But in poems and reverie, a daylight imagination, we are invited to participate. An unresolved yearning infused with the sorrow of the world, a mist which permeates. A woman in the tree, her deep and radical kindness, the hollow of the oak, a womb through which she is reborn. To mourn all frayed unblossomed beauty, rites of passage remain untraveled. This great oak with roots invisibly deep, a crooked back woman bent low, bowed down, she who wanders aimless now. Names a sacred tree. To discover the key for that aspect of your life which teaches and yet has held you back. In crucial moments when the world rushes in its particular way, so difficult for you, you are able to stay. You are able to take the backward step, to take the next step, one foot firmly in front of the other, with care. With great faith. Tree woman walks the path of bones. Tree woman walks the path of bones. She experiences the earth as an image of this body, envisioning a root moving through this body, the root imagination alive in the body, a fleshy network filled with invisible connections, this body an inscape, a vast multicolored land, amidst clustery thorns and gnarly roots, an old woman retains them, the songs. She carries them, remembers, and holds them close. Not bad, it's 12:07. I had things to say, but I held myself back because I don't know you all. And so anyway, so if you have questions or comments or just trust and ask yourself, ask. Don't worry about it. Anyone? No, I don't know how to tell.
We come sit up here.
Oh, okay.
I'm not being weird.
Okay.
And if anybody online wants, it raises their hand, we'll let you know.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated the invitation at the beginning to just let it wash over.
Yeah.
Because it totally changed my experience.
Okay.
And I was with you, and then I would sort of, it would fade back, and then you would say something, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. That resonates. So I just think it was beautiful.
Yeah. Resonation is important to resonate, because the things you pick up, those are things that you can keep and remember, and trust yourself to put them together in ways that are, work for you. Also, I don't know if it'll be possible, but at Buddha Eye, my talks, we put the transcripts on our website, and so that people can go back and download them actually, as well as listen to the talk. So I don't know if that will be helpful, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jessica.
I just wanted to thank you so much. This is such a beautiful talk, and I really felt it open something up in me that's kind of been quiescent for a long time for a lot of reasons. And so thank you for that. And I've had trouble sort of integrating the imaginal part of my life and my Zen practice, and you have shown me how to do that. So thank you.
Glad. I'm glad. I don't know if anyone else here has that issue. I practiced at Buddha at Dharma Rain for a number of years, and I had come as a troubled person, so I can't really put this on them, but I couldn't find my way with just the meditation and ordinary life. And one day in the library, their very library, was Thomas More and Carol de Soul. And that, with my art background, helped me find a way of practice that was good for me, or went more with my own life. So I was able to kind of begin to make it into more of one expression, and one that felt more true to me. So part of my Samanta Bhadra difficulty, although now I understand Samanta Bhadra differently than I did then. So anyway, so thank you, Jessica, and thank you for being a part of the class, the workshop.
Thank you for this. At the beginning, I don't know if I understood this right. This is from a class that you're teaching?
It was from a workshop. Do here, and a class that I did at Buddha Eye, which is the temple that I now practice.
Will you write a book about it, or is it just the workshop?
Oh, I don't know if I'll write a book. I'm not a book writer. I'm more a poet, and
Anyway, it was very interesting, and I had a really good friend who died about 20 years ago. He was really big into dreams, and at the time, it was a long time before I got into Buddhism after that. I was real skeptical about it, but since then, it makes a lot more sense to me. So anyway, thank you so much.
Not alone. Dream is not popular in
the
world, but maybe we can do a little to inspire. So. Anyone else?
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead, Ruthanne.
Thank you. Thank you for this talk. When I first read the precepts, the word create jumped out at me in one of the explanations of be original. And I'm familiar with Michael Mead. I don't know if you are, but
yes.
I think this is tapping into the gifts we've always all been given. So you're phrasing this, the word, one of the words you used, reverie, is just getting back to, I think, basic Buddhist invitation to full life. Thank you.
Oh, yes, yes, I know, yes. It's a good thing everybody has pictures that smile. So that's one of these experiences you could have, and you're giving a talk and it's a new place and you're not even someone that likes to talk publicly. And what if all the faces weren't smiling? So you can think like that. What would that do for you? And how would you manage if you sat here unexpectedly? Okay. And so anyway, just a Zoom joke. Okay.
So there. I want to
okay.
thank you for, I had never occurred to me to think of the Dharmakaya, Nimranakaya, Sambhogakaya that way. As some people know, I just did a podcast episode on the Trikaya, but I'm not an artist. I don't go there, right?
Yeah, like so much information.
The imaginal realm is one that I have neglected, I would say. So I really like, I understand, you know, the desire to kind of escape and transcend the mnemonicaya, you know, the realm of the senses. And then the experience and understanding and familiarity with emptiness and with the liberating teachings, where the self, the corporeal self and this world and all of it just falls away, is like, oh, you know, that's wonderful. And I can see how one can complement the other. But then there's like, how do they interact, right? You can have just a kind of a sense of like, well, in my meditation, I might have this perspective, but then I got to go back out into that messy world. And I feel like this is really pointing toward, you know, how do we be embodied? How do we really manifest this practice in the world? And it does require us to go into that imaginal realm that this is why I encourage you to keep on finding ways to share this with people.
Okay.
Because I think this is something that when I think about why I don't want to go into that imaginal realm is because I want to be in control. I want to be in control and I want to be right. And I want to understand things and like, you know, and I want to know that this is true and this is verifiable, and to kind of let go. Like you said, it can be a little scary, a little
more than a little scary. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you to the very end, and I'm kind of really unraveling this karma that has kept me captive, or I shouldn't say captive, but kept my practice alive, and some of me, you know, a lot of me captive in that work, you know, as it's unraveling, that we don't really want to let go of that self. And it's kind of interesting. And the work is over years, year after year after year. But I spent most of my life not being able to be in the world. First, I wasn't able to function at all. I just didn't really know. I didn't really feel I was okay with the world. That's what I learned in my home. And I didn't actually go to school, and I had all these experiences. So somehow being an artist made that okay, what made a very difficult experience. And that's not the only difficult experience possible, because as human beings, things happen to us. And if I stay too realistic, I think I've lost out. I feel a sense of regret. I feel that I've been passed by. But once I come into possibility, Presented in the Sambhogakaya realm, I really understand how I'm connected to all beings. And I as understand emptiness as something very different than getting rid of things, as pushing things away, as being calm, even though I'm not really fully complete and alive. I understand it differently than a place to kind of a place of death, actually. So I understand, you know, how to relate to my circumstance in a positive way, and then to approach meditation, you know, in a more positive sense, or, you know, as something that is more full, emptiness as fullness, emptiness as interconnectedness, emptiness as including all of the difficulties, you know, depression and all of these things. We keep saying wholeness, we keep saying infinite, but infinite is, you know, so, you know, that's why it's slow. And that's why, and oddly enough, this feeling of uncertainty and being able to, accept or stay still within uncertainty, and I still am not always there, actually is stabilizing. So you know, so, and that is, you know, your prajnaparamita, your sense of wisdom. So it's I don't know if that helps.
Okay. Thank you.
You want to do our verse?
Okay. Right. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. And thank you all.
All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.